want to start off by introducing the biological control section of the symposium. We've heard from a lot of speakers in the first half about the fluctuation of aphid populations, both on a yearly basis and throughout the soybean aphid infested regions. And I think we'll see from the next series of talks some of the impacts that predators have had and parasitoids may start to have on soybean aphid populations. And so the title of my talk is "The Landscape Diversity Impacts Predation of Soybean Aphid Across the North Central Region." And soybean aphid is known to be attacked by a large group of generalist predators. This includes native and non-native coccinellids, aureus, lacewings, and predatory flies. And there's been a tremendous amount of work done looking at the diversity and abundance of these predator species in soybean fields, as well as their impact on soybean aphid and interguild interactions between these species. And I listed just some of the publications which have come out on these topics, and many of these authors are here with us today. And the diversity and abundance of predator species and their impact on soybean aphid is likely to depend on the structure of the landscape surrounding soybean fields. We know that agroecosystems present unique challenges to arthropods, and disturbances such as tillage and pesticide application and harvesting require both pests and their natural enemies to frequently recolonize fields, and the surrounding landscape is a source of this recolonization. And so I've had a great opportunity over the last 3 years to examine the biological control of soybean aphid across a large geographic region with the help of several collaborators that I wanted to acknowledge, some of them here. In Wisconsin, Emily Mueller and Claudio Graton. In Minnesota, George Heimpel and Jeremy Chacon. And in Iowa, Matt O'Neill and Nick Schmidt. And we've examined biocontrol of soybean aphid across several spatial scales, both looking at the ability of the landscape to supply biological control agents, and then how within-field interactions between agents result in a net supply of soybean aphid predators. And so I'll be presenting three objectives of this project. The first was to determine if generalist predators had an impact on soybean aphid populations across this region, and the hypothesis was that there would be some suppression across the four states. The second objective was to determine if landscape structure had an impact on biocontrol services or the populations of coccinellids, which are our main predator of soybean aphid. And my hypothesis was that landscapes which were highly diverse and had a diversity of crop habitats as well as a lot of natural habitat would support the greatest biocontrol service by supplying the largest number of natural enemies. And the third objective was to look at interguild predation between coccinella community members. There's a lot of studies that have documented reduction in native coccinellids by exotics, and we wanted to look at how landscape might play a role in interactions between these species. And my hypothesis was that if landscapes which were highly diverse with an abundance of natural habitat supported the largest community of coccinellids, they may also result in the greatest interguild effects in soybean fields that were in those landscapes. And so to measure biocontrol services for soybean aphid, we selected a total of 26 sites across Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Iowa in 2005 and 2006 and established paired treatments. One was an open plant where soybean aphid populations were open to predators, and the second was a caged plant where exclusion cage was established over a soybean plant to exclude any predators from eating the aphids. Treatments were established when aphids reached an average of 10 per plant, and they were sampled at day 7 and day 14 after establishment. And I had 4 reps of these treatments in each of the soybean fields. And then we also continued counting aphids in the open field to track their population for the rest of the season following the study. To sample coccinellids, we selected 33 sites in 2005 and 2006 and set up sticky card traps. They were established just above the soybean canopy, and they were raised up across the growing season, and these were sampled weekly. And this is the fun part, to quantify the landscape. I obtained aerial photographs of each location, and the soybean field is in the middle of the circle. And we digitized a circle with a radius of 3.5 kilometers all the way around the soybean field, and we digitized it using ArcGIS, which just means I went in and cut out all the elements in the landscape. And then each summer I went on a massive road trip across the Midwest and figured out what was planted within all the polygons in the landscape surrounding the soybean fields. And then we analyzed the data at several spatial scales, ranging from a radius of 0.5 kilometers up to 3.5 kilometers. And what we found was that predators did have a significant effect on aphid populations across this four-state region. Here we have the number of soybean aphids per plant in 2005 and 6 at day 7 and day 14 of the study. And you can see in 2005, the exclusion cage had significantly more aphids by day 14 compared with the open plant treatment. In 2006, there was a significant difference between the exclusion cage and the open plant at both day 7 and day 14. But when we looked at individual sites that we sampled throughout this region, we did find that there is variation in the extent of biocontrol services that were supplied by predators. So this is a graphic showing a mean number of aphids per plant over time with the established economic threshold of 250 aphids per plant as that dotted line. And within the 14 days of the study, in nearly all the cases, the exclusion cage exceeded threshold. In some of our open plant treatments where predators had access to aphids, the aphid numbers on those plants also exceeded threshold within 14 days. So in these cases, predators were not really controlling soybean aphid. In other locations, predators suppressed soybean aphid, and in these sites, the number of soybean aphids remained below threshold longer than the exclusion cage, but eventually those populations exceeded 250. And in other fields, we saw complete control of soybean aphid by predators, and here the population remained below 250 for the entire sampling period. And this occurred in 15, 23, and 62% of our study sites. And so given this variation, we wanted to look at whether the amount of biocontrol services supplied for soybean aphid was related to the surrounding landscape. And so to do this, I calculated a biocontrol services index, which was just the relative difference between the number of aphids in the open plant treatment and the cage plant treatment on day 14. And to relate this to the surrounding landscape, we conducted a principal components analysis. And because these landscape variables were collected as proportions of a circle, they were all correlated with one another, and a principal components analysis allows you to take several correlated variables and transform them into a smaller number of uncorrelated principal components. And so what you want to look at is at this loadings plot is going to have all the variables that were included in the principal components analysis. And we combined all of the data that we collected in the field into 10 variables. There were 5 natural or non-crop variables, which included forested habitat, grasslands, riparian, open water, and urban. Our crop variables were corn, soybean, wheat, and other crops, which was all the other crops combined. We also calculated overall landscape diversity using Simpson's Diversity Index, and that's the D here on this graph. And we were able to interpret the first 3 principal components. Principal component 1 is here along this x-axis, and you can see that landscapes that loaded very positively on this principal component were very diverse landscapes with an abundance of forested habitat and open water, such as this landscape here. While landscapes that loaded negatively on principal component 1 were dominated by corn and soybean. And here's an example of that landscape from Iowa. And so we interpreted principal component 1 as an agricultural intensification index, with highly agricultural landscapes on one end and diverse landscapes with more natural habitat on the other. In our study considering coccinellids, I also want to show principal component 2 and 3 because they were also important for that study. Principal component 2 is along the y-axis here, and you can see that landscapes that loaded very negatively on this component had an abundance of grasslands and water, while landscapes that loaded positively had a lot of diversity of regional crops as well as wheat. And here's just some examples of landscapes for this principal component. And so we interpreted this as a perennial versus annual component, with perennial landscapes on the negative and more annual landscapes on the positive. The third principal component was an urbanization index. Principal component 3 is along this y-axis. You can see that landscapes that were highly urban loaded very negatively. On the positive were landscapes with a diversity of natural habitats as well as annual crops. And this is an example of a highly urban landscape just outside of Madison. And so when we examine the relationship between the Biocontrol Services Index and the landscape variables, we found a strong positive correlation between principal component 1 and the amount of biocontrol provided for soybean aphid. And so what this graph shows is that in landscapes that were highly diverse and had an abundance of forests and open water, there was a high biocontrol service provided, whereas landscapes with that were dominated by corn and soybean had less biocontrol service. In our coccinella survey, we found a number of different species in soybean fields, which included 8 total native coccinellas and 4 exotics. For the natives, the 2 most abundant were Hippodemia convergens and Coleomagilla maculata. For the exotic coccinellas, the 2 most abundant were Harmonia axyritis and Coccinella septopunctata. And we also detected 2 additional species of exotic coccinellas, which were formerly not known to occur within the 4 states within this study, and that included Hippodemia variegata and Propylaena quadridecimpunctata. And we did find relationships between the abundance of important coccinellas and landscape variables. So for Harmonia axyritis, we found that this species increased in landscapes with an abundance of urban habitat, as well as overall high diversity and abundance of forests. And so there's many reasons which could explain this pattern. Potentially, Harmonia axyritis would feed in many different agricultural crops and non-crop habitats. It's highly mobile, and so a diverse landscape may offer more prey. It may also use forests for prey or overwintering. And we all know from cleaning them out of our houses that they do overwinter indoors, and so maybe that increases the overwintering survival. But these are all hypotheses to explain this pattern. I haven't tested those yet. We found a different pattern with native coccinella species. H convergens increased with the proportion of grasslands in the landscape, and both H convergens and Coleomagilla maculata also increased with the proportion of corn and soybean. So this was kind of unexpected to me to see the natives responding or being positively correlated with cropping habitat. And as I said in the beginning, we did analyze our relationships between our biocontrol service and predator abundance at several spatial scales. And what we found was, although we did find some variability in the spatial scale with the highest correlations, there really wasn't a lot of difference once you got to 2 kilometers. Once you got between 2 kilometers and the 3.5, models really didn't differ that much. And what that kind of shows is once you get to 2 kilometers, you have kind of all of the landscape elements in their relative proportions that are going to remain relatively constant as you move further out. So a landscape is a repetitive environment, and apparently within the Midwest, at least in this system, 2 kilometers appears to be a relatively good scale. And so future work, I probably wouldn't have done a larger scale. I think that 2 is sufficient. And so I think one of the interesting patterns that's come out of this is the segregation between native and exotic coccinellid species, with native coccinellids being more abundant in grassland and crop corn and soybean dominated landscapes, while Harmonia axyritis is more abundant in diverse landscapes with abundance of forests and open water. And when I analyzed the coccinellid community on a state-by-state basis, we found significant differences in its composition. And soybean fields in Iowa and Minnesota had a greater proportion of native coccinellas, and this proportion of native coccinellity in the community decreased as you moved east. And so there's several potential hypotheses to explain why these patterns may be, and one that we considered was whether Harmonia axyritis was actually reducing native coccinellity in diverse forested landscapes via interguild predation. And so in 2007, Matt O'Neill and I investigated this in Michigan and Iowa, and we used egg masses of Coleomagilla maculata, and in July we went out and placed egg masses open to predators and egg masses caged to prevent egg predation out in soybean fields in these two states. We left them in the field for 48 hours and then returned to determine the extent of interguild predation that occurred and to determine if it was related to the landscape surrounding these fields. And what we found was there was a significant effect of egg predation on Coleomagilla maculata eggs. This is the mean number of eggs remaining after 48 hours, and you can see that significantly fewer remained in the open plant or the open egg treatment. We also examined this just during night feeding to determine when predation events were actually occurring. I put eggs out at dusk and returned very early in the morning and collected them again. And I found that during the night, there was not a significant reduction in eggs in the open plant treatment. And so from this, we can determine that the majority of predation events in this particular case were conducted during the day. When we looked at the effect of landscape, however, on egg predation, we did not find a relationship between any of our principal components and the extent of egg predation that was occurring in the soybean fields in Michigan and Iowa. But what we did find was that the individuals doing the egg consumption actually did vary. And so in Iowa, we found that the most abundant potential egg predator in the field was this Melirid, Colops nigriceps, which accounted for 50% of the total population of potential egg predators. And then we found equal numbers of Harmonia axyrhides, Coleomagilla maculata, which is known to cannibalize its own eggs, and Hippodemia parenthesis. The community of potential egg predators in Michigan was quite a bit different. It was dominated by Coccinella septipunctata at 65%, followed by Harmonia axyrhides. And so what we found from this is that while the extent of egg predation didn't vary related to landscape, the individual insects doing the egg predation perhaps did, although we're not able to record. We used video to attempt to record egg predation events, and we're not able to do so, but from our sampling, the communities were quite different. And so where these eggs are going in the food web appears to vary, either feeding back into a native-dominated food web or into an exotic food web. And so just to summarize these findings, we found that generalist predators significantly suppressed soybean aphid across the north central U.S. The landscape surrounding soybean fields did impact the amount of biocontrol service provided. I also found that coccinella communities were influenced by landscape, and that native coccinella eggs were subject to significant egg predation. And while this was not related to the structure of the landscape, the source of the egg predation is likely to vary across this region. And so I think this work has a lot of implications for biological control of soybean aphid and other pests. We found that biocontrol service is dependent on the landscape, which is important when you're considering the effectiveness of biocontrol, and if it is able to be included in economic thresholds, it may vary across the region, which would be important to consider. We also found that for soybean aphid, when fields are located in diverse landscapes with forested habitat, they're likely to receive more beneficial predation services than landscapes, which are highly agricultural. And so when we're considering future biocontrol work of soybean aphid and other pests where these predator species may be important, it's important to consider the landscape. Also, the landscape doesn't influence all predators in the same way. We can't always say that because it's more diverse and there's more natural habitat that's going to increase all species. It's especially important when we consider native biodiversity and the potential impacts of exotic species on native coccinellids to consider why this segregation into different landscapes is occurring. Well, I'd really like to thank all of you, and I'd like to thank all of the faculty, grad students, postdocs, technicians, and undergraduates, which have all helped out. This has been a really exciting project for me. I've really enjoyed working with all the other states and universities that have been involved. Thank you very much. Yes?
On those populations where your natural enemies are suppressive, I think
The question was how many of our suppressed populations actually exceeded the injury level, and I would have to look again at the data, but the majority of them did not. We actually only had a couple sites overall where we measured and they actually exceeded the injury level, but part of this was some people only measured a couple weeks after the exceeding the threshold because they were grower fields and then they were sprayed out, and so we probably don't have a great data set for that. Wayne? That's a good question. The question was whether there was any effects on Coccinella septipunctata at the landscape scale. It's really interesting. So we looked at coccinellas just during the 2 weeks of the cage study and then also across the season. In the 2 weeks of the cage study, there was a significant effect with it being more abundant in forested habitats and with also a lot of urban settings, kind of similar to Harmonia. But when you averaged across the entire season, there was not a significant effect of landscape. And one hypothesis I have for that is that these animals aren't just responding to landscape structure, they're responding to prey availability and other things within the landscape, and so potentially when soybean aphid populations were low, it may respond differently than if you average that across the entire season. Takuti, did you have a question?
Yeah, on one slide you said the diversity of some lady beetle species or something like that. When the diversity is that, how did you measure the diversity landscape? Is that including every land cover type or is there?
Yeah, so the question is how did I measure landscape diversity? We use the Simpson's Diversity Index, and when I went out and collected the data, I collected a total of 26 different land cover types, which were different crop and non-crop habitats, and then I used Simpson's D to determine overall diversity. But when we conducted the principal components analysis, I combined many of those variables, especially all the different crops, because throughout this region there's a lot of regional crops that might just be present in one location or a couple. Yes? The question was whether the landscape affects the ability of aphids to colonize fields. I have looked at landscape and soybean aphid, and I haven't found any relationship between landscape variables and either their arrival time or aphid population growth over time. And I think that the landscape probably does affect soybean aphid. I think it might be a scale issue. We were looking relatively small scales, and it may be that soybean aphid actually responds at a larger spatial scale. I also think because the insect uses both a agricultural habitat as its summer feeding area and a buckthorn, which would mainly be in forested habitats, it's kind of responding to two different landscape components. And I've done some work looking at breakpoints and maybe a nonlinear relationship between non-crop habitat and soybean aphid, and it sort of is most abundant in landscapes that have equal proportions of forested and soybean habitat. But I haven't quite fleshed that out yet. Yes?
Have you looked at any other aphids in the landscape? They initially draw in the coccinella and then move out into the soybean?
That's a good question. Have we considered any other aphid species? And we haven't. So far, this work has just been conducted in soybean, and we've only looked at soybean aphid and its predators. Thank you very much.